You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura Wilhelm Gibbs here, hour number two of our show. Lots to talk about, obviously, free agency, the draft, what the Browns are going to do, the big numbers out there. A lot of people staying home. Jason Pierre-Paul getting his deal done in the last hour here. Tom Bahali today getting his deal done with the Chiefs. And, of course, we saw just now in Buffalo, Richie Incognito, 3 years, $15 million, $5 million a year. Not bad, really, for either side of it. Incognito was regarded as one of the best guards in the league in the 2015 season. 216-578-0850. Let's go to James in East Cleveland now. James, welcome.
What's going on, Nate? How you feeling today, bro?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm going to have to say no to Carson Wentz, man. I think Jared Goff is the guy. I think it's just too many question marks and variables concerning Carson Wentz. Guy's a Division II guy. It's hard where you draw the line. It's like you got to have an accurate barometer to judge those guys. I believe I read somewhere where Carson didn't even play against the player that was invited to the combine. It's just too many risks for the Browns to take him. Also, it's something to be said when you go against the likes of a Joey Bosa, a Tyvis Powell, a Dolphus Washington, and Eli Apple all on one defense. It kind of brings out the best in you. It's like when I go play artificial with the kids outside. Yeah, I'm the automatic quarterback. I'm going to look like an all-star out there. And I think it's just too much risk to take this guy for the Browns.
I think that there is more risk with Carson Wentz than I believe there is with Goff. There's obviously risk with anybody that's drafted because it's not an automatic
proposition. Nothing's automatic.
Nothing
no.
is. All right, let's go to Bill in Cleveland, who does like Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I think the Browns draft Carson Wentz. I think they should trade down actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they should try to get another, mid-round high pick. And I think they should go after a pass rusher and shore up the offensive line.
Shore up the offensive line? Again,
yeah.
I think you look at the Browns' offensive lines where they put all of their resources year after year after year. And it has not led to wins. The Browns need to focus on the things that actually translate to wins in the NFL. And I could go through it. If you missed it, just go back to basically any show, and we'll talk about the five worst graded offensive lines in the NFL and how those teams did. Let's go to Blackwell in Cleveland, talking about free agency. Blackwell, welcome.
Hey, how y'all doing? Love y'all show. I'm finna just say what I got to say, then I'm going to be quiet and turn my radio back on. No, I like Goff over Wentz. But it doesn't matter really who you get in there if you don't keep your offensive line at least decent. We can't, like, if you don't sign Alex Mack, it's not like you're going to go say, okay, well, we're going to take that money and go give it to J.J. Watt, or we're going to go get Tom Brady. Guys like that are not coming here. You have to hold on to your guys because this is the NFL. You can always cut them later when you find somebody that will replace who you're paying. It's like you don't want to replace Mitchell Schwartz and Alex Mack with the guy Irvin, who was suspect all season. You gotta stop being cheap. All right, you guys have a nice day. God bless. Thank you.
I don't think it's about being cheap. I think it's about being judicious. And you've had Joe Thomas, Alex Mack, and Mitchell Schwartz on the same line for 4 years, and you haven't won anything.
And Joel Bitonio.
And Joel Bitonio for the last two. So I think it's about being judicious with your money. Can you find a center that could be pretty good? Maybe you can. They're linked to Steven Wisniewski right now. Obviously, that says a lot to me about what they think of Cam Irving at this point.
And I think it also says a lot to me about their odds they think they're going to be able to sign that long-term, big-money deal with Alex Mack.
Yeah.
He's garnering the interest. You know, the five-year, $50 million number is what, you know, there's rumblings out there for Alex Mack. The Browns might not necessarily want to pay it, and therefore have to have, you know, a second option along with Cam Irving. You know, and you hope you sign Wisniewski as an insurance policy, pay him some good money, you know, as a good player, a good center in the National Football League. You hope Cam Irving, your first overall pick, beats him out, assumes his position, and you've got a vet, you know, in line to play behind Cam Irving. And you never know. If Greco gets hurt, Bitonio goes down again, unfortunately, move Cam Irving to one of those guard spots, you stick in Wisniewski, and you hope not to miss a beat.
That's the plan. And last, if it is Wisniewski, we looked at Pro Football Focus. He was considered a better pass blocker last year than Alex Mack and one of the most efficient centers in the entire league in terms of his pass blocking efficiency overall. Let's go to Nate in West Salem. Nate.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You sure. Got it, man.
Hey, on one of the previous callers' line of thought, if we go by who they play in college, then it would have been foolish for the Steelers to have drafted Ben and foolish for the Ravens to have gone with Flacco. I mean, if you told me Miami of Ohio was a Division III school, I probably would believe you. I have no idea who
it's
they
not,
play.
It's not, by the way.
I know it's not, but, I mean, they're not playing – they're not contending for a national championship either, so Ben was playing subpar people when he was in college.
Okay,
and
Matt, can you just explain the difference in the level of player that goes to the MAC versus a player that goes to FCS?
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, first and foremost, there are – look at the number of invitees from MAC schools – to this year's combine versus
one number one overall pick in the NFL draft has been from a MAC school.
Right. Point take. I mean, that's the point. Again, there's very few prospects coming out of, you know, non FCS or what. I don't even know how to call it. What is listen, that league?
I think isn't the FCS? FBS is the
big
bowl.
Time. Okay.
Yeah.
So FCS. Okay. Yeah. How many guys went to the combine to be evaluated? Just goes to show the
not
tiers
many.
Of talent at that level, because if they were blowing people's socks off, believe me, the NFL scouts and general managers will scour this earth to make sure they can evaluate the best talent in the world.
Listen, and guys stand out. John Brown went to Pittsburgh State, and now he's the receiver for the Arizona Cardinals. Guys stand out from that level, and there is success. But you're talking about you don't want to deal in anomalies. Now, Ben Roethlisberger didn't go to that. That's not the same level of school by a long shot. I don't know why that's relevant to this discussion. Joe Flacco is, but let's not forget, Joe Flacco was recruited to, went to Pittsburgh, left Pittsburgh, and went back to Delaware. So this was a guy who was recruited to a big-time school. That never happened with Wentz. Not to say Wentz isn't good, and obviously he is good. Obviously, he's in this discussion. And I'm not saying you can't be good coming from that level. Nobody ever said that. It is a more difficult evaluation on tape when you watch Carson Wentz and when you watch Jared Goff. It's a more difficult evaluation. It's a more nuanced evaluation. There's much more projecting in it, and there's projecting in this no matter what. But you don't say that you don't write him off immediately just because he went to a small school, but you've got to do your homework and understand that there are a lot of things that go into this. I'm not writing him off. Joe Flacco is an anomaly. Tony Romo is an anomaly.
Right. Do you, with your one chance –
At number two overall,
to get the pick of the litter, seeming that no one will jump the Browns to number one, and the Titans most likely will take Laremy Tunsil, do you want to skip out on that chance to get the pick of the litter and the guy that you feel projects best in the National Football League and is the most certainty centered around him on being a top 15 quarterback or above?
Right. And in the Browns' determination, it very well may be Carson Wentz. My determination is that it's Jared Goff. We'll see what happens. Maybe they think it's none of them. Clayton in Cleveland, welcome to the show.
How y'all fellas doing today?
Good. How are you?
I want everybody to pump the brakes right quick. I'm going to tell you, as far as Wentz and Goff go, it doesn't bother me which one they take. What the Browns is going to do and what's going to determine whether they move back in the draft is what they do in free agency.
Okay.
And even if they want to move back in the draft, I feel maybe you can work a deal out with Dallas and move a few spots back and still get one of the quarterbacks.
Okay, Dallas would have to want to come up to number two. There'd have
Correct.
To be somebody that they would want. What would you be looking to? What do you mean when you say it's determined by free agency? What are you looking for them to do in free agency that would determine which way they go in terms of staying or moving down?
Okay, as far as the defense go, where everybody talking about Ramsey or Bosa, if they can boast up their defense. Besides just trying to keep at least half of the free agents that we do have, if you can keep Mitchell Schwartz and, say, Tayshaun Gibson, or Mack and Tayshaun Gibson, Benjamin, I'm on the fence with.
Would you make Mitchell Schwartz the highest paid right tackle in the history of the NFL?
No. But, see, I would have done this. I would have franchised him. At least it would have been for 1 year.
So you would have paid him roughly like $14 million for one
Correct.
Season?
Well, I mean, we have $30 million under the cap.
That doesn't mean you spend it unwisely.
Well, who says it's unwise? You're only doing it for 1 year instead of locking him up for 4 or 5 years.
Who says it's unwise? I would say it would be unwise to allocate that many resources to Mitchell Schwartz.
Well, okay, is there anybody in the draft that's better than him that you would be able to take in the second or third round? Or is there somebody that's a free agent?
Okay, how many? Let me just ask, let's just look at it a different way, right? Okay. How many wins has the Browns' unbelievable offensive line brought them?
Well, I mean, see, everybody keeps saying that with the offensive line done. The whole offense total was in shambles to me. The quarterbacks played okay last year. I mean, if the defense would have stepped up, we wouldn't even have the number two pick right now.
Correct. That is
so
fair.
So I can't say that. So, I mean, technically our offensive line is pretty good. It was the coaching.
When you watched our games, you didn't feel like our quarterback was under a heck of a lot of duress?
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. Especially even with Alex Mack in the middle. Yes.
Yes. So it just comes down to if you were going to keep Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz right now, you'd basically have one-fifth of your salary cap tied up in three players on your offensive line.
I didn't say Alex Mack and Schwartz. I said one of them.
But you'd be willing to make Mitchell Schwartz, who's never been an All-Pro or never been to a Pro Bowl, the highest-paid right tackle in the history of the NFL?
No.
Well, then that's the problem. That's the issue, right? Alex Mack is going to become the highest-paid center in the history of the NFL this offseason, and Mitchell Schwartz is going to become the highest-paid right tackle in the history of the NFL.
Oh, you actually believe Mitchell Schwartz is going to command and get that type of money?
There's so much money out there, and people spend it frivolously in free agency, that Mitchell Schwartz, the highest-paid right tackle in the league right now, $7 million a year. He is going to get more. I mean, everybody at the combine that I spoke to, it's an NFL person, said he's asking for significantly more than that. We had Joel Corey on here saying that if he was his agent, he'd be trying to get $9.75 million a year for Mitchell Schwartz. And I just don't think he's a difference maker. I don't think you pay people that aren't difference makers that much money.
But see, with Mitchell Schwartz also, is that where the Browns was trying to protect him, and I thought that's what depleted their offensive, as far as their offensive production, they wanted tight ends that were blocking tight ends to actually help him out on top of it.
So if you need, so this is what I'd say, and Matt, you can talk about this a little bit more, but if you need a tight end to chip, or a back to chip anyway, why would you be doing that with the highest paid right tackle in the history of the NFL?
The highest paid right tackle
should be on an island.
Should be on an island and go handle whoever they should be able to handle. Von Miller, you know, Tamba Ali all by himself. It's mano a mano, highest paid guy, best talented versus our best talented, highest paid guy.
Yes.
Because you could draft a guy in the second, third round, put Cam Irving out there as a developmental year two guy who has proven to deserve the right to play right tackle, and you compensate for his shortcomings with a blocking tight end, chipping back, or slide protection to protect his inadequacies as a second-year football player. You don't do that to a guy that you're breaking the bank for, making the highest-paid right tackle in all of football by a lot, by 20-plus percent.
Correct. I would love to keep him, but you're not going, not at the price that he wants, supposedly. So that's where it comes down to. Is signing, and by the way, that I don't understand, 1 year and giving him $14 million, are we winning the Super Bowl this year that you need to keep Mitchell Schwartz and pay him 14, basically double the most that any right tackle in the league makes in 1 year?
No.
That seems, I don't understand that. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more Cleveland Browns Daily. Free agency is upon us. We're not sure exactly how it's going to play out, but it certainly seems like it's going to be an interesting time and not a huge exciting time if you're a Browns fan. It's going to be a slow burn here. I think they're going to make some moves, but they're not going to make the big splashes. Money's being thrown around that's crazy, and I don't think that's in any way, shape, or form what you're going to see the Browns do under Sashi Brown and Chief Strategy Officer Paul D. Podesta. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here. A lot of teams starting to keep their guys as we get ready to go into free agency tomorrow. This is okay. Doodle Hoodleberg just texts us. What right tackle in the league are you going to put on an island with Von Miller without help and expect to win? Not one.
Okay.
Okay. So you're talking, that's the best player in the league.
But you do that. You've done that to Joe Thomas for how long?
Right.
Right?
And he's done
fine.
You've
paid him top dollar. He is by far and away, was the best, and is probably still at the top of his game, slightly, you know, descending. But you pay him top dollar, and he goes against whoever they line up against him each and every week and holds his own.
Yeah. And to me, if I'm paying a guy that much money, I am going to be able to put on. But against Von Miller, so yeah, you chip with Von Miller, you run screens at Von Miller, you run draws at Von Miller, you do whatever you can to try to slow him down. But it's going to be tough. That's why Von Miller makes the money that Von Miller makes.
Right.
But if I'm going to pay a guy the best ever in the history of the world at his position, he better be a dominant player. And Mitchell Schwartz has never been into a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro.
That's what I was just going to say.
I mean, we're acting like he's a deity.
Why?
Mitchell Schwartz walks on water, folks. That's what the kid would say.
He walks on water. And I get the perception. If you were Mitchell Schwartz's agent, your tone and your point of view would be completely different. If I were Mitchell Schwartz as a 25, 26-year-old, you know, four-year NFL veteran, having played on this offensive line opposite Joe Thomas, played at the level I did in my contract year, which a lot of people had him, you know, what, Pro Football Focus had him, what, all NFL or whatever they do, is one of the top right tackles. This is his time to capitalize. So I understand the conversation, right?
Yes.
And I just don't think sometimes, as much as I want to keep Mitchell Schwartz, and that's why I had him on my, you know, my top 10 free agent list, if you look around the National Football League and some of the best teams that made runs into the playoffs, deep into the playoffs, had guys along their offensive lines. Just, I mean, guys, undrafted free agents, third round pick, rookie player, you know, a fourth-round pick from 2 years ago that finally gets his opportunity, playing and playing well enough so to not be a liability and cost that team an opportunity to continue their run towards the trophy.
Right, and not doing so at an exorbitant price. And as, yes, the Mitchell Schwartz truthers, he did play very well against Von Miller this year, by the way, in that game. They did not have Demaryius Thomas. He was also matched up with Shaq Barrett in that game, who got the better of him a couple times. So Mitchell Schwartz is a very good player. I would like Mitchell Schwartz, so there's no question about it. I like Mitchell Schwartz a lot. I would love Mitchell Schwartz to finish his career as a Cleveland Brown and be the right tackle for the Browns for the rest of his career. I am just not willing to compensate Mitchell Schwartz at the level where he would become the highest paid right tackle in the history of the National Football League. I would rather spend foundation piece money at a position that I actually think impacts the game more.
Right. And do you feel like signing, because this is, I understand this is not our money. Okay. But it really should feel like our money because this is the team that we root for. This is the team that we want success for. And I guess my question to you is, do you feel like if we allot this amount of money, this obscene amount of money, to A, Mitchell Schwartz himself, potentially Alex Mack, and along that offensive line, that we could miss out in any other aspects of free agency because we've allotted so much money to that offensive line either this year or next year?
Well, and the thing about it, too, is you're just looking at, you know, you would have so much money invested in the offensive line, so many early draft picks invested in the offensive line. I think ultimately when you look around, it's about having guys that can make plays for your team. It's about guys that can make plays with the football on offense and guys that can stop playmakers from making plays on defense.
And wreck things on defense.
Right. You can cover up a lot of stuff on your offensive line. And that's why even when we were talking about Mitchell Schwartz, very good pass blocker, would be great in a spread offense, would be great on a dome team, would be great. Not a tremendous, he's not the best run blocker in the world. Fair. I think it's fair to say. I think even he would be able to admit that. I think when you look at Hugh Jackson's offense and how quickly the ball gets out, the other way to combat these pass rushers is getting the ball out. And if you can get the ball out, you would rather have a guy who's a little bit nastier up front and more of a mean-spirited run blocker in Hugh Jackson's power running game.
Yeah.
So I like Mitchell Schwartz. Again, if Mitchell Schwartz wanted to stay here for 7 a year and be, or 7.5, let's call it, or even 8 and wanted, and we made him the highest paid right tackle, we would. I think that's fine. I think those salaries are going to go up in the coming years. But if you're just talking about getting in the 9s per year, no thank you.
Yeah.
No thank you. And it's just a value thing. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have the latest on free agency and the buzz around the NFL from Jason Lockenfora right after this on CBD. There ain't no secrets anymore.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Time now to go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline and bring in CBS NFL insider Jason Lockenfora. J-Lox, how are you, brother?
What's going on, my brother?
Nothing, man. It's so good to spend some quality time with you in Indy.
Absolutely. Pleasure was all mine.
It was a pleasure indeed it was.
One, the Notorious. That doesn't get any better than that.
No, it was a solid trio we had on that particular evening. The Stoli Dolies were going down like water, J-Lox.
There you go. I think I stuck to beer, though.
You did. You were smart.
The evening. I was pacing myself, Nate.
You were. That's smart. Smart. Rookie mistake on my part. So here it is. This is kind of the crazy season, the silly season. What's the latest you're hearing from around the NFL as free agency approaches tomorrow?
I mean, look, there's going to be a lot of guys who get overpaid here, and that's just the reality of it. And this is not a very good group of players, but there's over $200 million in cap space available out there. Some teams like the Jags and the Raiders who aren't even to that 89% minimum spending threshold, so they've really got to throw the money around, you know, just to hit that salary floor that's mandated under this new CBA. So a lot of guys getting paid, particularly anyone who has a whiff of an ability to rush the passer. Just watch as those numbers continue to come in. Not so much for JPP, where that's a one-year prove-it contract for him again, given the unusual circumstances of his injuries.
Sure.
But you look at what a guy like Robert Ayers ends up getting when that goes down in another day or so from now. You know, Mario Williams is going to get his $10 million a year, even though he dogged it in Buffalo. You know, Tom Bahali re-signing with the Chiefs, I bet you those numbers are upwards of 10 a year. There's not a lot of that going around, and there's not a lot to be had, and there's a ton of need. You know, Malik Jackson at over $15 million a year. I mean, that's just where the money's being spent. Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny, I wrote a column. You know, Derek Wolfe's agents got all bent out of shape about it, but you looked at three or four of these contracts that were done before free agency, and you're thinking, why is Derek Wolfe doing a deal now? Watch when Malik Jackson hits the open market and crushes his deal, you know, which he did. You know, there was people at the NFLPA who were frankly getting a little upset at some of the deals that were being done in late January and early February, you know, when some of these players still had extreme leverage. Had they just waited to get to this sort of, I don't want to call it the tampering period, because it's not tampering, you know, waited to get to this legalized negotiation period. And again, how many of these guys are difference makers? I don't think too many. You know, you could take your top 10 players in this free agent class. How many of them are really going to turn the fortunes for any of these teams? You know, a Janoris Jenkins, a Kelechi Osemele, a Malik Jackson. They're not, but they could be valuable pieces for some teams that are trying to turn the corner. And the Raiders are going to spend a lot. The Jags are going to spend a lot. And those teams haven't won in a long time, and they're trying to hasten that process.
They certainly are. Are you hearing anything on the Browns in terms, we've heard yesterday a link to Steven Wisniewski. Are you hearing anything on that front? And I'll follow up after you answer that.
Yeah, I mean, look, certainly they're going to have to replace Alex Mack somewhere if he leaves. And that's not a position where there's a whole lot to be found out there. I mean, this is not a great offensive line free agent market really anywhere, and particularly at center. I mean, after that, what are you talking, you know? Lyle Sendeline, I mean, there's, you know, Gretkowski, there's not much there. So, yeah, that move would make some sense for them, and that's a kid who played, you know, pretty well at times for the Raiders prior to them signing Rodney Hudson and that sort of being the end of his stint there. You know, I don't think it's out of the question the Browns keep,
one of their free agents, maybe more than one of their free agents, pending free agents as they continue that process. You know, what does the money look like for a Mitchell Schwartz? I mean, this Osemele deal is a little weird. He's being paid like a tackle. You know, he's played right tackle, he's played left tackle, he's played guard. So him getting 11 a year, A, I'm not surprised, and B, I think the teams and the agents still have to sort out what that really means because, you know, what is he being paid to do? Is he going to end up replacing Donald Penn as the Raiders' left tackle? You know, that's a very legitimate possibility. So that's not necessarily a right tackle deal. That's not necessarily a guard deal. You know, the Browns obviously could use some skill players, but you look at this group. Who lights your fire? You know what I mean? Like, could Hugh Jackson bring in one of the receivers from Cincinnati? I mean, that's certainly possible. He knows them very well. The money on both of them will probably get a little bit crazy, but they have cap space. So, you know, the Browns making a move for one of those guys wouldn't shock me. But, again, I think you have to look at that for what it is, right? I mean, those are number twos, you know, or two
slash
three.
There is not a number one receiver.
There is not any close to a number one who's available anywhere. Not on the trade market, not in free agency. They're just not available.
Have you heard anything about Tashawn Gibson or Travis Benjamin drumming up much interest out there yet?
You know, the safety market in particular, I just had some agents I was talking to before I came up with you guys who represent some safeties, they're having a hard time getting a handle on exactly where this is going to settle down. You know, if the Reggie Nelsons and the Eric Weddles, you know, who are up there in age, if they don't get what they're trying to get, and I'm not sure that they will, then that could have a trickle-down effect on the safety market. So, you know, I don't know that that's when we're seeing all these deals happen now. I think safety, running back, positions like that could linger, you know, into Thursday and Friday before more of the notable names are picked through there. I think that market could take a little bit of time to settle, whereas most of these will be picked bone dry by the time 4 o'clock tomorrow rolls around. Receiver Benjamin, look, he can take the top off of defense. I mean, he doesn't have the ideal size, but he has some speed. That's a commodity that people always like. What does a Marvin Jones get? You know, when he comes flying off the board in the next 24 hours, where does he set the bar? What does, you know, Sanu get? And then I think some of those guys fall in the line. But no, I haven't heard. I haven't heard that. You know, that he's got a deal already or anything like that.
And Jason, is it safe to say that for Browns fans listening that they're going to take a backseat, toe-in-the-water approach to free agency to let the market kind of figure itself out and probably most likely, as they kind of did last year, become a player in free agency in week two rather than right out of the gates?
Yeah, in the sense when you talk to agents about the Browns, they come back and say things like, you know, they're not sure that they want to pounce. Some have used the word indecisive. I don't know if that's fair or not, but at least, you know, those guys didn't get a sense that the Browns were going to be one of these teams like the Raiders, like the Jags, you know, like the Titans, that were leading with their checkbook and that were going to have one or two deals done way before, you know, 4 p.m. March the 9th ever rolled around. The Browns seem to be, taking a little bit more of a judicious approach with it. And, yeah, I mean, maybe they find some value plays. Now, you say the second week. That's how it used to work, right, where the second wave would start, like, Sunday or Monday. I think by next week, this thing's it's over. You know what I mean? Second wave is over, the third wave is over, and it's like backup long snappers and like punters. You know what I mean? Like it.
Yeah.
This thing is so expedited now when you've got, there's just not many names out there to begin with that are very sexy, and then B, so many teams with so much cap space. I really feel like by the weekend, it's going to be kind of like, okay, ho-hum, we're kind of done here.
Sure, yeah. I mean, and again, my point was, you know, McCown, Randy Starks, Brian Hartline, Dwayne Bowe were not priority free agents, but ended up being, you know, priorities to the Cleveland Browns, you know, probably day five, day six of free agency last year.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always also lingering contract issues where, you know, a team goes into the league year and they're willing to stomach a contract, but then they sign a few other guys and then they try to go back to that guy and have him take a pay cut, and then maybe he ends up hitting the street. You know, I mean, we've, like, Steve Smith a few years ago with Carolina. You know, there's always some of these that don't necessarily get a bow put right on them by March the 9th or whenever the league year kicks off, you know, in any individual year. So that could be a market that they look to explore as well. You know, do the Miami Dolphins go out and spend a bunch on Mario Williams and Reggie Nelson and Adam Jones and whoever else and then decide, okay, we're just going to cut Cam Wake or we're going to pull the transition tag off of Olivier Vernon and just let him walk. So Yeah, I mean, there could be things that happen down the line, contingencies like that, that end up making sense for the Browns.
In this free agent market, one name has been coming up, and we talked about him a lot on this show today, and that's Brock Osweiler. What is the latest on Brock Osweiler, and if he's so good, why has he not been locked up by the Denver Broncos already?
Well, I mean, the reality is that the contract that they have on the table, which I'm told is, you know, $13 million a year hard for 3 years. So, you know, again, that's a lot of money for a dude with seven career appearances who lost his job to a, you know, barely breathing Peyton Manning. And they'll go up to 15 a year. So, I mean, he could basically end up getting Alex Smith money, you know, $15 million a year over the first 3 years of a deal. That's pretty substantial. The only thing that's working against him is he does have a market in that there is another interested team, and that's the Houston Texans. And, you know, if you've got one team, you got a contract. You got two teams, you've got a market. And he's got a market. The interesting thing there is the other quarterback who's out there of note, Fitzpatrick, they have the same agent, Jimmy Sexton. And if Brock Osweiler stays in Denver, then Fitzpatrick is essentially checkmated. Because where is he going? He's not going back to the Texans, right? They just traded him for a conditional sixth-round pick a year ago. He's not going back to the Rams. You know, he's not going to the Cleveland Browns. You've got McCown. You know, you guys are drafting somebody at two, whatever. So all of a sudden, he's sitting there looking at just the Jets. So whereas the Broncos and the Texans may get into a little bit of a, I don't want to say bidding war, but a little bit of a battle over Osweiler, you know, who is younger with more upside for the 33-year-old guy, Fitzpatrick. You know, he could end up finding himself with not much of a market, depending on what Osweiler does. Now, if Osweiler goes to Houston, then I can see Denver, you know, putting a decent little contract in front of Fitzpatrick and trying to have him as a bridge quarterback to whomever they develop or draft or what have you. But at the end of the day, it makes a lot of sense for Brock Osweiler to be back there with John Elway, you know, who handpicked him, who has helped with his development, and who's willing to put a lot of money in that kid's pocket for someone, again, who, frankly, there's more questions than answers about him.
There certainly are. And I just kind of take the tack that if Denver hasn't locked them up when they are still in their Super Bowl window, it tells you all you need to know about how they truly feel about Brock Osweiler.
Well, and I mean, look, the reality is if they didn't have the franchise tag on Von Miller and if they weren't trying to keep Malik Jackson, you know, then I think they may have transitioned Osweiler or something like that and then let the market speak. But I'll say this. If I end up getting Osweiler for 3 years at $45 million, give me that versus $22 million and potentially, you know, $26 million for 1 year of Sam Bradford. At least they control the kid for 3 years and he's been healthy and, you know, he's a big strapping kid and whatever. The Sam Bradford contract to me is the biggest head scratcher this whole offseason so far.
Yeah, what have you heard in terms of rumors right now, maybe potential cuts, et cetera, that's been the most surprising to you?
Surprising? Not
interesting.
I mean, you know, they're still, like, Mike Wallace is still going to get whacked. You know, a name that Browns fans will remember, you know, Jordan Cameron, he took about a $2 million haircut down there in Miami not to get himself whacked and to try to stay there for one more year. I haven't heard of anything that really kind of caught me by surprise or made me do a double take. I mean, I can tell you that there are some pass rushers who would like to be cut. You know, Terrell Suggs, he'd love for the Ravens to cut him right now. He'd be a free agent out there, and he's set to make $4.75 million. He feels like he could probably double that on the open market, even coming off the Achilles tear. So, I mean, there's some guys who wouldn't mind being able to get out of their deals, again, especially with the way these pass rushers are being paid. But ultimately, I don't think their teams will let them go because they understand the premium that they have to pay for those guys.
Always an interesting time of year, in some ways silly season for the National Football League as money is thrown around. And you can follow at Jason Lockenfor on Twitter for all the latest on it right there. The one thing I'll ask you, and finally, because it's not free agency related, but what is the latest you're hearing, if anything, about the Browns and this quarterback pick at number two overall?
There's obviously, you know, two names that are first and foremost there, and I'd be shocked if they didn't have their pick of either one. It's still pretty early in the process. If you put a gun to my head right now, I would say the kid from Cal, but I wouldn't shout it from the rooftops. You know what I mean? I might whisper it in your ear. But I can see at the end of the day him having a lot of what Hugh Jackson wants, you know, hand size notwithstanding.
Yes, indeed. J-Locks, always a pleasure, man. Enjoy your day before it gets totally bananas for you tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
All good. My pleasure, buddy.
All right, the great Jason Lockenfor from CBS. We'll be back to wrap things up with our final thoughts right after this here on Cleveland Browns Daily.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, wrapping it up here on this Tuesday, the last day before it is a new day in the NFL. Free agency and the new calendar year starting tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Gibbs Lockenfor saying that, you know, basically what he's hearing is that the Browns are not going to be heavy players. They're not jumping in and leading with their checkbook. Everything that we expected to hear there. I thought it was also interesting. He said, I wouldn't sing it from the mountains, but he pretty much feels it's a lock that the Browns will take Jared Goff at number two.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot can change, and that's what he said. I think even he is surprised, you know, when you start seeing some of these financial numbers come in on some of these guys. But as he mentioned, there's so much money with the cap being raised. One of my big takeaways, you know, he goes, you don't think that, you know, Suggs doesn't want is hoping the Ravens cut him? Like, Suggs rooting for the Ravens to cut him so he can go get paid somewhere else. I mean, we talk about the Browns, and we talk about the Browns losing these free agents potentially, and, you know, the world is ending, according to some fans. Man, you look at the Bengals, you look at the Ravens, they got a lot of guys potentially that are going other places here.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think the Cincinnati Bengals have, what, 12 unrestricted free agents?
And they are actively looking.
Right. Nelson, Iloka, Pac-Man, Leon Hall. There's, what, four out of your five defensive starters, right?
Yeah.
You've got Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, are two more on the offensive side. I mean, there are a lot of guys in Cincinnati, and especially in our division. So do the Cleveland Browns just sit back and let everyone, you know, again, that's what happens with success. Okay, congratulations, good for you. Let's refill our cupboards ahead of these teams that are having their cupboards go bare and use that as an edge, you know, with the analytics of Paul DePodesta, sure, and Sashi Brown and the new mentality and Hugh Jackson, allow, you know, a year to get his feet wet as the head football coach here and implement new ideas and a new way of thinking and a new way of operating for who is retained from the old Cleveland Browns, you know, to also project onto the new Cleveland Browns moving forward.
Exactly. And again, I think what they're doing is judicious. If you got to retain people, that's important, but you've got to retain the right people and at the right price. And if there's a guy that the Browns certainly don't want to let go, they're not going to let him go. But again, you've got to be, I think, reasonable in your expectations for what they're going to do in free agency.
Right.
And by the way, keeping everybody here is keeping everybody here that's been doing nothing but losing.
Right. And you kind of said it, keep the right people or good people. This is nothing. This is not an attack on Mitchell Schwartz, the person, or Alex Mack or Travis Benjamin or Tashaun Gibson on who they are as people. You know, what you followed up that up with is at the right price, you know, and you got to get it. You got to play both sides of the fence because this is their one time to go cash in. And of course they want to get every $1 million, you know, matters to Mitchell, Tashaun, Travis, and Alex Mack, even though it's going to be, you know, millions and millions of dollars. That over the course of 5 years is a lot of money. This is their one chance. The Browns have to draw the line in the sand and go, this is the way we're going to do business. You cannot straddle the line, especially now that there's a new regime here.
Well, and the other thing, the big takeaway, and Matt, I know you got caught up in it when you asked him, because I thought the same thing. Oh, there'll be players, you know, more so the second week of free agency. Free agency is going to be done in 5 days, it sounds
like. Yeah, it really does. But my whole point was, again, simply because –
yeah, they're
Wednesday,
be
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday came and went, and the Browns started moving on Monday, Tuesday,
exactly,
Wednesday of the following week.
Yes.
And we're still able to get the Hartlines, the Randy Starks, the Dwayne Bowes, the Josh McCowns. Not saying, you know, in hindsight, oh my God, they're amazing signings, but when added, there was intrigue and optimism surrounding everyone that we signed.
Yes. Now you have an opportunity to go out there and figure out the way to get this done the right way. And we'll see what the approach they begin to take tomorrow here when the new league year begins, as everybody turns the page to 2016 and players will have new homes. Some probably not in Berea tomorrow, but I would imagine in the next few days you're going to start to see guys coming and making their way into Berea. Younger players that the Browns think have an opportunity to excel coming here to Cleveland.
I agree.
That will do it. We've got a big thanks to Sir Andrew Gribble, Jason Lockenfora. Of course, want to thank Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Yes.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.